Hi friends, welcome back to Karina Faith Diaries. Today's episode is packed with so much. I don't think I've cried in an episode like this in a while, so pick up the tissues. Hearing Emily's story, you will find a lot of struggles with alcohol from a young age through college that really exploded and throughout her life, in and out of jail, several DUIs. And I just wanted to add this as a trigger warning for you. If you're not in the right mindset to hear this, it might be a good one to skip, but I would hope that you would want to stay because there's the story of redemption is really great and how she was seeking something and faith really changed things around for her. She found the healing that she had been searching for her entire life. There's just a lot of stories of denial and the perspective of a daughter walking through this, a young woman that she was. And also you will find the perspective of a parent, which is my point of view. You guys have heard a little bit about, you know, my daughter's struggles with, you know, addiction. And I was able to see from Emily's point of view how she felt. So it's just really wholesome. We really connected in another level. And I'm just so happy she was able to be here. So without further ado, I hope that you guys enjoy this. Let's get to it. Hi friends, you've made it to Karina Faith Diaries, your new go-to spot for real talk about the journeys that shape our faith. I'm Karina, your host, and I'm super excited to chat about real-life struggles, wins, and everything in between. This is all about honest conversations, lifting each other up, and the power of a relationship with Jesus. Whether you're here to learn, connect, or to get inspired, let's get started together. Hi friends, we have Emily Capoletti in the house today. I am so excited to have her. We've met a few years ago, so welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. We're going to talk a little bit about Emily's life, and I actually knew a little bit about it when we were together at Recovery, yeah. But we had such a short time to talk about things. We never really knew people deep down, and so I'm super excited for you to tell your story today.
Yeah.
So just give us a little bit of background of who you are and where you were born and family things.
Yeah. Again, I'm Emily. I was born in Northwest Indiana. I was born in Highland, Indiana, and grew up there most of my life. My parents split when I was 7 or 8, and then I ended up living with my mom full time and, you know, just seeing my dad every other weekend, once during the week, the typical set up. I'd say it was a pretty rocky divorce. I remember a lot of fighting. My parents both were young when they had me, so they were still living in their 20s. They were drinking and partying, so I was exposed to that a lot. Not that I was drinking or anything at that, you know, that young, but I was definitely exposed to it. And then, yeah, I went through high school. High school's really when I started drinking. My group of friends at the time, we hung out with an older crowd, so we were exposed to it, I think, a little earlier than most. And then,
what age do you feel like it was?
I think it was like 14.
The same. Yeah, 14. We have a lot of similarities. Yeah. Yes.
It was about 14, so freshman year, I think, is when I first started. You know, people were having house parties and doing whatever. And then my mom started dating someone that lived far away, kind of, in Michigan. And so she would be gone every weekend. And so then I was home alone. And so I would have the parties at the at my house. You know, so then I didn't have to leave. And over time, it just, it got out of hand in the way that, like, there was just so many people there. People I didn't know, people I had never talked to, older people. And I never really cared, though. I just felt like, you know, all these people were at my house.
You were the cool kid.
Yeah, like I loved it.
Of course. The attention, fitting in.
It was, yeah, it was all of that. All of the people pleasing that came with it. You know, and even the next morning when everyone was gone and I was the only one there cleaning up everything. Like, it was just whatever because everyone was there.
Did your mom know about those parties or she didn't want to know?
I think it's she didn't want to know. She was a clean freak, and our house was very put together. So we would actually, my friends and I would actually put away anything that was breakable before, take pictures where it was like exact positions, and then put it back after. But she was so, like, she would notice stuff. So there's no way she didn't know. She never said anything to me. But there's no way that she didn't know.
Did you guys have a good relationship?
At the time we did.
Okay,
Yeah, I would have considered my mom my best friend,
Oh,
even
good.
through college. I didn't see my dad often, and especially when I got into high school, I didn't really, I had extracurriculars, I had all this stuff. So it was, my mom was really, we were really close. We would travel together, and yeah.
Okay, did you guys know Jesus at that point or no? So
No.
she was not a
Yeah,
Christian.
my mom's side, they all had gone to Catholic school. For whatever reason, my mom did not. And so I didn't. I went to public school. We would go to Mass on Easter and Christmas, but that was the extent of it. There was nothing more.
That's so funny. That's how my family is too.
Yeah,
Like
there
they consider
was.
themselves such Catholics, but they're like, mom's like, yeah, it's
Yeah.
Easter. Let's go to
Yeah,
church.
that's literally, that's, yeah, that's how it was. I feel like I don't really remember going to church ever when I was young. So I think I believed. Like, I knew of
Something,
Jesus, but I
yes.
didn't know what that meant. Like, there was no
Intimacy
pray.
or
Yeah, there
yes.
was nothing like that. So, yeah, then my senior year, I geared up and went to Purdue.
That's amazing though, with
Yeah, I was
yes.
excited. It was the school I really wanted to go to because it wasn't super far away. Some of my friends were going there, but not everybody was going there. So it was definitely like a good opportunity for me to get away and live on my own. I'd never done that before. So freshman year, I roomed with a friend and then I joined a sorority as well. Sophomore year is when I moved into the sorority house with like 80 other women. Yeah, it was hectic. But with that, like somebody was always going out. Someone was, any given day of the week, like somebody was going to be going out to the bars, to a house party, to a fraternity, something. So there was even more
Exposure.
normalcy and, yeah, exposure and normalcy behind going to drink on a Monday night.
It's so crazy to me though, because Purdue is notorious for being a smart kid school, you know? So it's like, what time? And I have conversations like this with my daughter too, like, what time do you study? You know, like some people can really pound through and go out and party, and I don't have, like, my body cannot handle that. And I'm glad that my daughter's is like me in that sense too, but still, it doesn't always stop, you know, her, or it didn't stop me from going through. So then you're in the sorority house, lots of partying happening. How was your life then?
So I was a visual communications design major, and with that you have a sophomore review. So my junior year is when I had my sophomore review because I didn't do, I was undecided my freshman year. So everything got pushed back. So I was going to be a fifth year no matter what. So I had my sophomore review, which is kind of like they look over all of your work and decide if you're going to get in the program or not. If you don't get in the program, all of those classes are very much for that program. So you really do have to start over. If you get in the program, you just continue on. Fortunately, I did get into the program, but then shortly after that, I was second guessing my major. And it was because I was struggling in my classes and it was hard for me to get there. The classes for the major were mandatory and I was just,
Party.
yeah. I mean, I was hungover most of the time. I would be sick walking to class. I lived up on top of a hill, so that the walk just sounded terrible every day. And so I ended up switching my major to public relations. I think
Gosh, that's crazy.
communications. Yeah, it was a mess. Like I was just trying to graduate. And so then my summer before my senior year, I was at Purdue. I was subleasing an apartment and I was out drinking with one of my friends, or a group of our friends one night, and then went to her apartment, slept on her couch that night, and then was driving home to my apartment in the morning. And I turned the wrong way on a one way and I got pulled over and I got my first DUI on
Wow, how old were
campus.
you?
Oof, I was 21.
Okay.
Yeah, I was 21.
Wow, so you're already an adult, like,
Yeah, and I
you
had been
made it.
going, I mean, I had a fake ID prior, so I was going to the bars. Like it was nothing, which
That you
I,
hadn't done
yeah, and I
before.
look back, I'm like, I wish I would have waited, but I took all the fun out of turning 21. But got my first DUI, spent my first night in jail, was terrified. I mean, it was the most devastating thing. The next morning, they released me, and one of my sorority sisters came to get me and took me to my apartment, where I just closed the blinds and just laid there and was just so upset with myself for probably days. And I mean, I didn't tell anyone. I was trying not to tell my mom, but financially, like, I could not pay for the stuff I needed to pay for.
Did you have to hire a lawyer and go and...
No, okay. I don't believe, I feel like that was so long ago. I don't think I hired a lawyer. I think I used a public defender at that time because it was my first time. Mm-hmm. So I ended up just having to go to these classes. There were like 2 all-day classes that I had to go to about basically like a driver's ed class again.
I actually had one too. Did you know that? This is bringing, it's like flashbacks. My kids are little, and I remember being so overwhelmed because they were all like, we had 3 under 3, and yeah. I was just like, oh my gosh, what did I sign up for? We had like a Brazilian group of mothers that I was the first one to arrive and the last one to leave, kind of like that too. I was always very much into the Brazilian culture, is very much drinking heavy.
Yeah.
I just remember coming back home, and the kids had... Actually, that night was special, though, because I was in school. I was in fashion school until nighttime. So I left at 10 p.m. and I was going to go home because the kids had bike day the next day. And their little bikes were in my trunk, in my car, that I would take them in the morning. And one of my friends was just really like, you have to come. Everybody's here. Just come and have one glass of wine. Da, da, da. So she just pressured me so much. It doesn't take very much, but I was like, okay, I'll just come for one glass of wine. And literally everybody was about to leave. So I downed like 2 glasses of wine.
Yeah.
Just drank fast and was like, bye. Okay. Left. And I got pulled over like, I don't know, less than a mile from my home. Ugh. And this guy was following me like really close. And I had like a little turbo Audi at that time. So it was like, you know. And so this guy was just like, you could see his joy taking me to jail. You know, I was just bawling. And it was such a traumatic time too. Like, these jails are 60 degrees inside. Yeah. The women, all sorts of backgrounds, and, you know, it just feels sorry. But I guess I walked in and they were like, oh, you don't even need to tell us why you're here, because they could smell the alcohol.
Yeah.
That's like how fast I drank. And I just remember being the most traumatic thing that had ever happened to me. I'm like, I never want to be put in this place again, you know, and I learned my lessons. Sometimes it takes a few places. So
did you also get a DUI?
I did. So I ended up going to, Brian came to pick me up with Antonio the next day.
Yeah.
And he was always telling me, nothing good happens after midnight. So go out, have fun, but come home before that. And it was right around midnight because I left school so late. And I just remember being heartbroken for like the bikes. My car got towed, so we had to pay at that time. This was like 2010, $500. I never forget that, for that car to be, for me to get it back. And then we had to hire a lawyer because I said, no, not guilty. So you had, and I didn't even know, you guys, I called my Brian at like, it was 3 a.m. by the time I made it to jail. And I called Brian saying, I don't know what to say. They're asking me if I'm guilty. And then this poor policeman, that was like a young man, he wrote in the paper, say not guilty, and showed it to me like behind the thing. Aww. I'm like, okay, not guilty. Yes. But I knew I was guilty. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, yes. I was just so, I had no idea what I was doing. So I had my mugshot probably like with, you know, black eyeliner and like running. And I just felt heartbroken for the kids and the bikes. They missed bike day because all the bikes were in my car.
Yeah.
And the disappointment too, just, I remember taking a shower and just like scrubbing. And I was so thirsty too, because when you drink, you get dehydrated. So thirsty. And I remember going to drink water. You guys, this image in my mind, you go drink water from a fountain that it's on top of a toilet. Yeah. And the toilet has all kinds of crustiness because it probably never gets cleaned.
Right.
And it was either me drinking water, staring at that crustiness, or not drinking water.
Yeah.
It was very traumatic.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I don't wish that upon anyone, but that was good. Sometimes we need to learn it.
Yeah.
By doing.
Yeah.
So then you go to jail, spend the night in jail, mm-hmm. and the next day, super disappointed.
Just so, yeah, I remember just being like, and at the time I was watching Orange is the New Black, that had just been like a big thing. Oh,
and everybody glamorizes
it. I couldn't watch it anymore. I was done. I could not even turn that on because I was just like mortified by myself. So then, you know, I went through the process. I did end up having to get a breathalyzer put on my car for a few months. Mm-hmm. So that was another financial burden that my mom had to pay for because I was in college and I wasn't working. And
wow. So wait, you had to take tests for...
Yeah, to start your car, you would have to blow into the breathalyzer.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more to that later on in my story, too. Wow. And so with that one, I had it for 4 months, and I remember there were several times where I would blow and it would fail because of drinking the day before or, you know, something like that, where I wasn't like trying to necessarily drink and drive, but I was...
It was still in your system.
It was still in my system. So anyway, after that, I was just drinking more. I really didn't learn much from that.
You're so young too.
It's yeah. Hard. And it just felt like it was a mistake. Mm-hmm. You know, like I just made a mistake. Like I just needed to be smarter.
What did your friends say about that? Was anybody alarmed or... We're like, no, this is part of...
Yeah, no one really said anything. And I didn't really... I don't remember telling everybody.
Okay.
But I did get an email from my sorority. And they had found out. The national board had found out somehow. I'm sure through... I'm sure they could find out easy. So they were saying that I needed to either, like, kind of plead my case to a board. Or I could just drop. So I dropped my sorority.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So that was my, that was going into my senior year that happened. So then I'm scrambling because school's about to start. I had to find an apartment because I can't live in the house.
Oh my gosh.
So eventually I did, found an apartment. Honestly, don't know why I ended up going back to Purdue after that DUI. I should have just moved home, but you know, I wanted to be back on campus and I was way far behind in everything. All my classes.
Do you feel like you wanted to graduate after all the work or did you just want more?
No, like I wanted. Yeah. Like I wanted to graduate. I really wanted to do that. I wanted to be a college graduate. But then spring break of my senior year, I was up north just at home. I didn't go anywhere for spring break. No one invited me anywhere for spring break because it had just gotten so bad. It was just, my drinking was terrible. No one wanted to be around me. I was more drinking by myself in my room at my apartment while my roommates were all going out and stuff. I just was kind of the outcast at that point. And like, rightly so, I look back, I'm like, I wouldn't have wanted to be friends with me either. I was terrible.
Did you realize that at the point?
No, like, I just felt like everyone was being mean to me.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I didn't realize at all. But it was definitely just, I was too much. Mm-hmm. I was a lot to handle. Where's Emily going? What she, you know, it was just too much. So I was home for spring break, still drinking just by myself. Ended up getting another DUI. And that one was within a year of the last one.
So it's a felony.
It's a felony. Yeah. In Indiana, it's a felony. And it was pretty close to time, but it was obviously not. So, so that was my first felony DUI. Had to get a lawyer for that one. And I don't remember, there was not much to that one. I didn't have to have anything put on my car. My license was suspended for like 90 days, I think, which is pretty standard.
Yeah.
Court, I had to go to court. I feel like I had to do classes, but it wasn't anything crazy. Okay. And it was because we had the attorney. Like that made it, you know,
easier. Yeah, a little less. Yeah.
So yeah, then after that is when I did move back home.
Okay.
I moved back home and enrolled in Purdue Cal, which is Purdue Calumet up north. And I was going to try to go to school there. That didn't end up working out because I was just couldn't get there. I was just drinking too much.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just a mess.
How about your mom at that point? Did she see any signs or?
Yeah. You know, I think she did the best that she could. She didn't know. I'm an only child. So this is all new to her. Yes. Everything that's happening is new.
So hard.
And yeah, she has no idea what she's doing, but she was doing her best. I think she wanted to continue to live her life too and not put everything on pause to help me or deal with my stuff. So, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's so hard.
So, you know, I do think she did her best, but looking back, I feel like she could have done more.
Yeah.
And having a daughter now, I'm like, There's nothing I wouldn't do for her. I would put everything on pause for her to help her. I don't feel like I got that same support from my mom, which was very unfortunate because, like I said earlier, she was my best friend. But she was a drinker too. She really was. And I don't think she wanted to stop. I think she had the issue, but I don't think she never got in trouble. So it was different. When you get in trouble, it's like on display for everybody.
It's so different because you are confronted with your own demons when you see that. And I experienced that with Sophia when I saw her spiraling out of control, which she was, like I said, such an angel child that I never saw that happening. And all of a sudden, seeing that, I'm like, wait a minute. She's watching me drink too. And she's thinking that that's normal for her. Like you said,
Right,
you know,
literally.
it's like it's what you are exposed to. So you think that that's a normal thing. And it wasn't until I actually quit drinking for the 2 years that she stayed in rehab that we were like really fighting for her life. I said to Brian, if I don't stop and show to her that I can still have fun and have a life without drinking, it's gonna be really hard. And at that point, too, it was more because I needed to be hyper aware of what was going on in the house, you know, and we had cameras everywhere, alarm everywhere. Like, I just started to be, because I, you know, if you drink a glass of wine and go to bed, I would pass out just, you know, sleeping. And it does take a lot. And being confronted with your own demons is very hard on everybody. And if you don't have Jesus in your life, then it's just so hard to do. Nobody wants to do that.
No, and I didn't at the time. I didn't have Jesus in my heart.
Yeah.
There
And
was
so your mom didn't either,
no,
right?
she
So it's,
didn't.
she couldn't
No.
see.
And she, I mean, we would drink together even after the DUIs. Like, there were times where we were at the house and we would have wine together. And I'm like, I just wish that she would have stopped, even if it was just for a time. But instead, it was putting the locks on the fridge and, doing all this stuff to just kind of, I mean, and I got through the locks. Like, it didn't take long for me to get through the locks. It
Oh my
didn't, like, I
gosh.
would find everything.
It's kind of putting a band-aid on the
It is,
problem and not really solving the.
And she wasn't telling anybody else. Like, my family, my two aunts, her two sisters, have been super supportive since they found out everything. But I had been going through everything for a while
Yeah,
before
without any
she
support.
told them. And she didn't
Wow.
want to tell anyone. I think she was embarrassed. But I just, I wish I just had more support, different support. I felt like I was kind of doing it on my own.
So there wasn't even an option for you. While you're going through all of this, did you ever think maybe I shouldn't be drinking anymore?
No, not really, because a lot of people would say, well, you just need to learn how to drink better. And
You guys,
I
that's
was,
so crazy.
and looking back, like, I had a ton of friends in high school. I was very good in school. I was in extracurriculars. I was in dance and cheer. Like, looking at it, like, I seemed to be doing great. And so with the drinking, I think people just assume, like, you're smart, like, get it together, learn how to drink better. Don't drink and drive, obviously. But
And never thinking that drinking might not be for you.
right,
This is not
never,
a good thing.
never. I thought maybe for a time, at most a time, like a time, but never completely done. There was never a time where I was like, no, I need to stop drinking. I just needed to drink better, smarter. And so for several years, that's what I tried to do. In 2014, my mom was just kind of done. And so I went to go live with my dad and my stepmom. I didn't mention this, but my parents, when they got divorced, it was pretty terrible. They didn't get along at all, even after the fact. Like, it was just always a battle. And my mom had kept me from my dad. And I didn't learn about this until way later on in life. Like, I'm still finding out stuff now from my dad. But she had, like, back then it was landlines. We didn't have cell phones. So my dad would call the landline to talk to me. And my mom would, I would maybe be there, but my mom would just not answer, not tell me.
Oh my
He would
gosh.
show up to come pick me up at, like, a scheduled time that I didn't know about. And I just wouldn't be there. I'd be at a friend's house or wherever else. And my mom just kind of was like, sorry.
So this whole time you're thinking that your dad probably didn't want a
Yeah,
relationship with you.
I just kind of didn't think about it. Honestly, I was just in my own world. So she painted this picture of my dad for a while. And then my sophomore year, I stopped talking to my dad completely for a year. There was a shooting on campus. I think it was junior year. And I did not want my dad to hear about it and start freaking out. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't been talking to him for a year. And then when that happened, I did call him and tell him I was okay. I didn't want him to worry. And since then, it's been great. Like, that was like the turning point in our relationship. I started talking to him again. He came to visit. Mm-hmm. He had gotten married in that year. And so I had a stepmom all of a sudden who, you know, she probably had a terrible picture painted of me because I was just not even talking to anybody. And my dad's family, I didn't talk to them either. So the summer of 2014 is when I went to go live with my dad and my stepmom, which I had never lived with them before. Mm-hmm. It was very tense. I remember just feeling like I couldn't do anything. I was still trying to drink. I was still, you know, trying to hang out with people I shouldn't be.
Did your dad know about all the DUIs and everything?
He did. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he did. We didn't talk about it. He just knew I had been in trouble. I'm sure my mom had told him.
Yeah.
But then in November of 2014, I ended up going to Florida, to West Palm Beach, to a 30-day rehab. Oh. And I was still on my dad's insurance, and he had really great insurance. So I got to go to like
a great place.
Yes, it was very nice. There was like, you know, you would go to the spa, you would go get massages.
Oh my gosh,
you would,
like celebrity high style and rehab.
Yes. And I remember being there with a lot of people. It was mostly drugs that people were in, mostly around my age though. I was 23 or 24 at the time. And so it was different. I had never been around drugs at all. Mm. Never. Not that I would know of. Like, sure. I'm sure when I had parties at my house, I'm sure there was stuff going on. I was super naive. I had never been around it. That I know of. So this was all new to me, like all the stories that I was hearing. And so hearing the stories and knowing what these people had been through and being told by the therapists, the counselors, the leaders, that I didn't really actually have a problem. They had told me, you don't really have a problem. Like, you just need to figure your stuff out. And so that was instilled. And this was my first exposure to all of this. So I was taking it all in. I'm like, you know, they're right. Maybe I don't have a problem. Like, maybe this is just a season and I just need to figure it out.
So let me just back up just for a minute. Yeah. What led you to decide to go to this rehab? It's just, did you realize that?
Yeah, it was my family.
Okay.
It was my parents just being like, hey, like, let's figure this out. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, if you were to ask my dad, he probably would have said at that time he didn't think I had a huge problem. Mm. He knew, like, I wasn't me. Mm-hmm. And he knew me sober.
Yeah.
You know, he knew me my whole life. So he knew that this was not me. This was not his daughter. I was acting completely different. I was isolating. I was sneaking out. Mm-hmm. Like, sneaking out in your 20s. Like, that's... Yeah. You know, that's not right. No. There's something wrong there. And the rehab I went to did expose me to what would be the charismatic Christian church that I'm used to now.
Okay.
So I went to a church down in Florida. It was a big church. And I honestly don't remember much about it. I remember the music. I remember, you know, the message was there. I don't remember what the message was. Mostly remember getting to leave the rehab to go to church.
Okay.
And that's what was like but that was the first time I was exposed to what a relationship with Jesus could look like.
Okay.
And I remember seeing people just being very happy, like greeting us. I remember the greeters. I remember the people getting us to our seats and they knew there was a partnership there. So they knew that we were coming from a rehab, that we were there because of that. And, you know, but I remember being very welcomed. So I think that probably was like the seed planted because these people were so happy and I was so not happy.
Yeah.
So sad.
That is so interesting to hear that. 'Cause I am a greeter and I haven't greeted in a, I don't know, I want to say a couple of months because of travels and everything.
Yeah.
But just knowing that it does make a difference because it is my gift. I'm like a joyful person. Yes. I'm like bubbly and woo, like you.
Yes.
So it is something that it's so nice to hear that, that some people, you know, and sometimes all it takes is that smile and that welcome.
And I can remember the face. I do remember. Wow. And that was in 2014. That was almost 11 years ago. Mm. I remember and them handing us whatever they were handing us. Yeah. But I just remember that their faces were very happy.
And feeling welcome.
Yes. And even since then, I've been through a lot, and mm-hmm. but I still remember that. That's so it amazing. It is a huge thing to be welcomed, especially mm-hmm. when you maybe don't feel like you kind of feel like the outcast, or you feel like you don't fit in, mm-hmm. which I didn't. I didn't feel like I fit in. Sure. And I think that going through life, I had tried to like chameleon myself to yeah. be who I needed to hang out with those people because they were doing what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And mostly that was drinking, whatever yeah. that looked like, whoever that was. You know, if they were, you know, hanging out at a tattoo shop, like yeah. that's what I was going to do. And I was going to let you give me a tattoo as well. And yeah. I was just going to, like, those are things that I did mm-hmm. that I'm like, gosh, looking back, I'm like, that's not me. You know, that was not me, but I changed my whole life. Persona, yeah. Just to fit in with people that I shouldn't have been trying to fit in with. Yeah. I was just people pleasing. And yeah, I, again, didn't have Jesus in my heart yet. Yeah. I didn't know that he had created me the way he created me for a reason. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of that yet.
So what the enemy meant for evil, God turned into good. So this 30 yes. day in the rehab yeah. really led you to at least know about
yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't say that I really like, you know, stepped out and I was like all gung ho. Cause I wasn't.
But it was an intro.
But it was. Yes. It was an intro. This rehab also exposed me to a lot of different things that I was trying to use to cope with my addiction. Hypnotherapy was something that they had at the spa place that we would go to. And so I did hypnotherapy thinking like, this is really going to
change,
set me free.
Yeah.
And I remember, I didn't say this, but I had one of my best friends had cancer in my senior year of high school.
Wow.
And he had passed away. He passed away from the cancer.
I'm sorry.
And I felt like that maybe I held on to that for a long time because I remember like he had called me and I didn't answer or something like that. And
you were feeling guilty.
Yeah, and, just like maybe a little bit of guilt. And so when I went to the, I remember the hypnotherapy, that was the specific thing that I worked on, like working through that guilt and that. The grief, because I didn't really grieve because I was drinking all the time. That was how I was grieving. You know, so I just remember working on that in hypnotherapy, but it really not doing anything. Like I still felt terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I still missed this person, but that was just me trying to find something.
Mm-hmm. You
know,
you were something. Seeking.
Yes. I was seeking something. Yes. I was seeking healing from anything that I could.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through the rehab. I did meet some really great friends that, you know, they are great people. There were probably, I can't even estimate how many people were at this rehab. There was a ton of people. So I got out and then I still continued to live in Florida. I was at a sober living home.
Okay.
They call them halfway houses down there. Yeah. So you still have these rules. You have a curfew, you have drug tests, alcohol tests, like all this stuff you have to do. You have to go to AA meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I was still going to an outpatient program within the rehab that I had gone to.
Okay.
So I was doing well for a while and then I wasn't.
Mm.
We started sneaking because we lived in like these little apartment style houses. So they were not connected.
Mm-hmm.
There were several bedrooms in them, but I lived with girls that I was in the rehab with and we were all very close and we were sneaking alcohol in and drinking after they would do their rounds at night and check on us. We'd be like, okay, good night. And then we would be drinking. And I remember getting caught after the fact one time because they took urine samples. And so they sent them to the lab and, you know, I had
alcohol
in my system and I told them, and I think I believed it. I told them that it was NyQuil. I said, no, I didn't drink. I swear. And they believed me. They were gosh, like, guys. I remember hearing them because I was in a separate room listening to like the director talk. And I remember her saying, I believe her. Mm-hmm. I know she's telling the truth. She did not drink. I did. And then they, you know, they sent it off and they can test for those things. Yes. I didn't know, but they can test if it wasn't, if it was medicine or if it was actually alcohol.
Isn't this just like, honestly, this happened to us too. Like when Sophia was doing her outpatients too, I was very, cause I was very naive to up until a point. And then I'm like, this kid cannot fool me anymore. I'm like full on. And this nurse or whatever, like that, a lot of people are not qualified to be there first place, which is 100%. So sad. And this lady was just letting the kids kind of run around, and she tested, they would do a drug test every time that they would come in, and she tested positive for one of the substances there. I can't remember some, because Sophia was into pills. She went through all of my cancer medicine that it made me feel queasy and I hated it. I just left in the back of the cabinet, not thinking anything. Ladies, be careful with medicine in the house, because the kids are so, they will go to it. So anyway, she tested positive and I'm like, okay, she's positive. She's like, oh no, this is like, this can happen. Like Sophia's like, yeah, no, I didn't do anything. I'm like, I'm just thinking, lady, are you serious? Right. Like, maybe I could be fooled as a mom, but you are here to catch this kid. Yes. Like, it just makes me so angry. And those things are expensive. Like, you had insurance. We did not, Emily. Some people, some parents had to sell their homes 100%, to afford this.
100%.
And it's just like, and this is the kind of stuff that you run into. Yeah. It's like, are you for real?
And that's big down in Florida specifically, that community.
It's all about it.
Yeah. The rehab I went to eventually shut down because of fraud, because of insurance fraud. Wow. And it was a nice facility, but it was just a revolving
door.
There's
so much money into it.
It's a revolving door. Because you know what happened when I eventually got found out that I did drink? They sent me back to the rehab for 10 days.
Oh, and as if it's going to solve any.
And they're, I mean, they're, and the, I've seen the insurance papers. They are, the stuff that they're charging the insurance is crazy. And so I could imagine not having, like, that's just mind blowing to me.
Yeah.
But it's just that community down there. It is a revolving door sometimes. There are people that I had met through that were actually there for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And there are people I still talk to.
Wow.
There's a woman that was at the halfway house that I was at and she was the one that was saying, no, I believe her. And looking back, I'm like, gosh, I feel so bad because she believed in me. She should not have believed me at that time. But eventually,
addicts are very charming people.
Yes,
and they would do anything.
That's exactly what it was.
Yes.
And but she, her heart was in the right place. She was always the one that I would go to. And she made a huge impact on my life. I still talk to her here and there. I think she's still in Florida working in the recovery community because it is really big down there. But finding those people, and she was a believer. She talked to me about Jesus here and there. You know, she wasn't trying to like push me, but she definitely was a believer and just amazing. And she kind of reminded me of my mom, or I guess a mother figure, not necessarily my mom.
Yeah.
Which at the time, like I didn't, my mom came to visit me, but you know, there's distance.
You still need it. You still needed a mom.
I did.
I still, at 45, I need my mom.
And
still.
I'm hoping my daughter feels the same way forever.
Oh, she will. Yes. It's like, my mom's still my best friend.
I ended up eventually getting kicked out of that halfway house because I kept drinking and I kept lying about it.
Wow.
Being sneaky. That was like my thing. Just trying to be sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
I did it through high school, did it through college, did it with everybody, anybody in my life I would be sneaky with. And that was ultimately like the trying to be sneaky was like the detriment of my life. Mm-hmm. Like if I was just honest with people and just said like, I truly have a problem, I feel like it, you know, it would have been very different for me, but I just wouldn't admit to it. I lied and I snuck and I...
And maybe you wanted to believe your lie, right?
I think like, I did. Yes. Yeah. I think I just... And I think I didn't want to believe that I had a problem.
And
I
a lot of people were telling you that you didn't have a problem. So exactly. So, I get it. So then you got back home eventually or...
Eventually. But I stayed in Florida. I ended up renting a room from this elderly woman. And when I did that, I was working at a spa, just a, you know,
receptionist.
Front desk at a spa, and was drinking there on the job. They had caught me multiple times.
My gosh.
I mean, I would hide. There was like this planter in the bathroom that had a fake plant that was just sitting on top, but the bottom was empty. I would hide a bottle of wine in there, and we were next to a Trader Joe's. So at my lunch, I would go and sneak it and bring it and put it in the bathroom. in the bathroom that everybody used. But I knew no one was going to look under that plant. And I would sneak back there.
And have a little fix.
Just, all the time. It was crazy. Looking back, I'm like, how did I even function?
Yeah.
How did I do anything? And I probably wasn't. Mm-hmm. I probably was doing terrible.
Yeah.
But then I ended up getting a job at a rehab.
Okay.
Not sober. And so that kind of tells you that community down there, they thought I was, but
they would not test you?
No, I never was tested. And I mean, looking back, I was a mess. There's no way they didn't know. I didn't last very long there. Mm. Did not last very long there. And then eventually went back to work at the spa again. And my boss there, I remember she had pulled me in her office and she was like, do you think you have a problem? Mm. Like, do you need help? What do we need to do for you?
Wow.
It was her and the owner. Yeah. And she had seen me. We had gone out together. Like, okay. I had gone out to parties with her. And she was like, Emily, like, your job will still be here. We will do. It was her and the owner. She was like, we will help you. Wow. Like, what do you need? And I was like, no, I don't need anything. I don't know. Like, just didn't want to accept the help.
Yeah.
And she was just, you know, she was so
sweet. How amazing of her to actually. Yeah,
literally so amazing.
A lot of people just brush it off and like, this is not my problem.
And she just, you know, because I was good at my job when I was present.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she knew that. And I think she saw that I had some kind of work ethic, but it was masked by the drinking and, you know,
the addiction,
the hangovers and all that. But eventually I did move back home. I moved in with my dad. And actually during the time that I lived in Florida, my mom moved to Belize, Central America.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, it was right. Yes, yes. My thoughts exactly. We had visited Belize several times together, my mom and I.
Mm-hmm.
She loved it. She hates like city.
Okay.
She doesn't really like people.
Okay.
So we went down to Belize several times.
Is it more of like a beach?
Yeah. The island we went to was 3 miles long and 1 mile wide. Very tiny.
Wow.
Three streets. Front street, middle street, back street. Those are the names of the street.
Like, and she wanted to...
And she just, that's her thing. She's more free spirit.
Okay.
I
would go insane in a place like this.
Yeah. She moved there. I mean... And she had gotten married as well to my stepdad. They just did like a quick like courthouse thing.
Sure.
And so he moved down there with her too. And I remember her telling me like, oh, you're living in Florida. Like it's only a 2-hour flight from Miami or from Fort Lauderdale. And I was like, yeah, that makes so much sense. But I'm like, how? I was still doing so terrible. Like,
yeah.
I was still, and she knew that because I'm her daughter and she can hear it in my voice.
Sure.
So another, like the abandonment kind of started there too, where I'm like, well, my mom just left. And so I had no other option but to go to my dad's, which wasn't a bad option. But again, it was tense when I moved home. My stepmom, you know, we didn't have a relationship at all.
Mm-hmm.
And rightly so. I was terrible.
Sure.
I was not a good daughter, stepdaughter, friend, nothing.
Did they have kids?
No.
No, okay.
No, I'm an only child all over.
Oh, okay.
On both sides, yeah.
Okay.
So I moved back home for a little bit. Didn't last long until I was back into another 30-day rehab in Texas. So I had gone to Texas, and this is another weird thing that they do. I was not going to be admitted to the rehab unless I came in with something in my system. They would not admit me. Insurance said that I couldn't.
Oh my gosh. How messed up is that?
It's very. And especially because when you tell that to an alcoholic or to
they're
someone,
like, okay, I'll just go to the bar.
Which I did. My dad drove me to the airport. I was going by myself. I was getting on the airplane and going to Texas by myself. And so my dad got me. He was like, you know, he didn't know.
Yeah.
He had no idea. He heard the insurance people say she has to have it in her system. So my dad, we went to Walgreens, I remember, and he was like, I'll go in and get it for you. And I was like, no, I'll go do it. I don't want you to have to do that. I wanted to get more than he was getting.
I'm just heartbroken about this. This is awful.
It was so bad. And so I ended up getting like two things that I didn't need. I mean, I needed a little bit in my system.
But
I
you're like, this is my excuse to get hammered.
Yeah, yeah, this is it. So I drank in the car, I think. And then my dad took the one and I had a whole nother one in my suitcase. So I went to the airport bathroom before I checked in my suitcase and was just drinking crazy and missed my flight. Like it
got drunk.
Oh yeah. Wasted. Yeah. Missed my flight. Had to get on a different flight. There was a person pick me up from the rehab in Texas at the Fort Worth airport. And he was calling my phone, like, where are you? Like, couldn't find me. And so when I got to the airport in Texas, I got my suitcase, which had the alcohol in it, went back to the bathroom, drank more, put it back. Like, it was a mess. I mean, I got to that rehab, and I'm surprised they didn't take me to the hospital because I was just so trashed. So trashed.
Oh, my gosh.
It was bad. And that was just, you know, it wasn't what required that I get to that point. No. Yes. But when you tell someone...
how can you say an addict, you need to be using in order to be admitted.
Just drink a little bit, you know, to come in, which... Yeah. When I went to Florida, they didn't require that. So strange that...
This should never be required. No. Never.
But it was 100%. And if you asked anybody in that facility, they would have said the same thing. Like, they had to have something in their system to get admitted. For the insurance purposes is what we were told. So I stayed there for 30 days. Another amazing... I mean, we went horseback riding, zip lining, like... amazing, beautiful. Yes,
sure.
Right. Yeah. And I'm looking, and I get what they were trying to do. They were trying to show you, like, you can have fun outside of drinking and drugs. And, but I just don't know how much inner work we were doing. Again, there was not much. It was mostly focused on, like, the AA and NA programs, which are amazing programs. I've seen so many people get healing out of that. Personally, I wasn't getting healing out of that. I needed something more. So, moved back home after the 30 days. I didn't stay. I moved back home. I did well for a while. You know, it all blends together.
Sure, so yeah.
There's a few more DUIs in here. Eventually, there was two.
So didn't quit drinking.
No. And at a time, I don't remember if this was before or after Texas, I had two ankle monitors on. Wow. One for GPS and one for monitoring the alcohol in my system.
Wow.
And at another time, I was on this thing called Anabuse. And it's a drink. And you have to go to like the courthouse to take it. And you have to go 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, at a certain time. And drink it and sit there for 15 minutes and have it in your system. Because if you drink while you're on it, you get extremely sick.
Okay.
Extremely.
Wow.
Extremely. And I would know because I drank on it. And I mean, I got sick. Like, I would be all red and blotchy and I felt like I was dying.
And instantly. That did not stop you.
No. From... And it was after, like, a little bit of alcohol that would happen. And I still... Yeah, that was when I was still living with my mom and she had seen that.
Yes.
And, you know, she was pushed. She was pushed. I'm not saying she just, like, abandoned me. She was.
Sure.
I pushed her. And I take full responsibility for that because she, like I said, she did. She was trying her hardest, but she didn't know what to do. Yeah. No one did.
No, we don't have the instruction.
No, there's manuals. No. Yes. Yes. And now that I have a daughter, I'm learning that there's no instruction manual to this child.
Yes.
So, yeah, I still continued to drink, and I was living with different relatives for brief moments. My grandparents, my aunt, just would always get kicked out. I ended up going to another rehab, 30-day rehab, but where I'm from, Northwest Indiana, then ended up in another sober home, was drinking there, got caught.
Wow.
Yeah, I went back to the rehab. When, you know, I was just bouncing all over the place. I had no consistency. I literally probably didn't know where I was sleeping half the time. So then my friend, I was living with my aunt at the time, and she had kicked me out because she found a bunch of alcohol in my room. And so my car was packed up. I had gone to work. I was working at a call center at the time. And my friend Carrie lived in North Carolina. And she was like, why don't you just come live with me? And I was drinking at work.
Oh my
gosh.
Know,
as one does at this time. And I was like, okay, like, I'm going to do it. So I got in my car, not sober, and was trying to drive to North Carolina.
Oh my gosh.
I made it to Warsaw, Indiana. And it was January, so there was snow out. I ended up driving my car, like, down a hill. It was like this weird... It wasn't on the interstate, but it was down, like, a hill. And someone had seen me and came and like helped me get my car out. And then I was on my way. I ran over a mailbox. So I think at that point somebody had called on me. I ended up getting pulled over, arrested on a DUI, taken to jail, and then released the next day. But they release you 24 hours at the time you're arrested. So I was released at like 3 in the morning with nothing. Nope, my car was towed. I didn't have my phone. I had my wallet with my debit card in it.
Wait, the police releases you at 3 a.m. with nothing?
Nothing. In Warsaw. I'd never been to Warsaw.
Guys, this is just, I can't believe this.
And I had no phone. I had asked them, like, is there a hotel nearby? The nearby was like 3 miles. So I was in like shorts, a hoodie, and my UGG boots. It's snowing. Walked the 3 miles to the hotel. I didn't have my ID, so they turned me away. And then the lady, you know, thank God for this lady. She was like, there's another hotel that they may let you come with no ID. And I had my jail papers. I had my release papers with like my mugshot. That's what I was using.
As your ID.
As my ID. So the guy that owned the hotel let me stay there, and that was fine. I eventually did call my aunt and my cousin. They came to get me, and then, you know, I don't even know. I think I went to a hospital. They had picked me up and they took me to a detox back where I'm from. And then I ended up going back to the rehab that I went to up there for another 30 days. After that, I had gotten out. I was doing okay for a little bit, and then, ended up living in an apartment by myself, which, and I had no license at this time. My license was gone. Suspended like indefinitely.
Sure.
I think it was like 10 years or something.
Yeah.
So I was living in this apartment that my parents were helping me pay for because I had no money, no way of getting anywhere. I was working at a gas station, so I would walk to the gas station. It was like a mile away. Would walk there. Still not sober at this time. Wow. I was not sober. I was still trying to go to AA meetings, but always using the excuse that I didn't have my license. So eventually I got in with the wrong crowd, found out that I had a warrant for my arrest for a failure to appear, and then another warrant from a theft that I didn't know I did because I was drinking. And it was at a liquor store, and I took money off of the tip out of the tip thing or whatever they had on the, and I didn't know I did that. I had no idea I did that.
Wow, Emily.
And I actually didn't find out about that until I was, so I had gotten arrested on the warrant for the failure to appear, went to jail up north, and then found out about that theft while I was there. So I had to go to court twice. I'm like, why am I going to court twice? And they were like, well, you have a warrant. Like someone had posted the surveillance video on Facebook and someone identified me that I went to high school with. Wow. I had no idea any of this happened.
Crazy and embarrassing too. Embarrassing. Like so exposing. Yes.
And I so badly want to find out who like said that's Emily and just thank them because eventually
I was gonna say it is
like eventually it led me to like sobriety and God and you know yeah and I would love to find that person. I don't know who it was.
Maybe they will come out.
Yeah, maybe they'll come out and they'll say I did that. That would be great because I want to say thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I ended up being in jail in the county where I'm from for 2 months.
Okay.
And then transferred to Warsaw because that's where I had the failure to appear.
Oh.
Transferred to that county for 4 months. So I was in jail for a total of 6 months from June until December of, this is 2019 now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that last DUI happened in January of 2018. So that January 2018 to June 2019 was just craziness.
Yeah.
Just drinking. I didn't get in any trouble. That I knew of, obviously.
Sure, yeah. Maybe
that happened in that time. Yeah. So then, yeah, eventually I got out of jail. And it was in jail where I really was taken away from everything. Didn't have my phone, didn't have people, didn't have anything. And it was, you know, everything was stripped from me. And I think I needed that. Like God needed to pull me out of the situation was where I was because I was going to die. 100% was going to die. And put me in jail.
Yeah.
And if he didn't, you know, I would probably not be here.
Yeah.
And it's hard to think about now because of the life I have now. and like being a parent and like thinking about my parents having to
deal with that.
Like, yeah. Oh man, it breaks my heart.
But from a standpoint of a parent, I'll tell you this, that it just breaks our heart to see your child going through it and like not knowing what to do. Like, I can go through my cancer, whatever, yeah, and just be fine. Yeah. But if something's happening to your child, yeah, and you feel so helpless, you just don't know what, yeah, to do.
Yeah.
It's very humbling, and it's very, you have to give it to God. Like, I, yeah, can't imagine how people who don't have God, what do they do? Because it's just such a difficult thing. So it is very hard, and I feel like different parents cope with it in different ways, you, yeah, know, and like with your mom, she just didn't know how, yeah, to, and it's, she didn't so know, hard, yes,
yeah, but... And I look back and I just, and I know, and I was angry with her for a long time.
Oh, I bet.
A long time. And right now our relationship is I don't think it'll ever be what it was. She, mm-hmm, lives in Mexico now. She,
oh wow,
moved. It's just a different relationship.
Yeah,
she's not met her granddaughter, which breaks my heart for my mom.
Yeah,
because my daughter's really cool.
Yes.
But you know, she, like you said, she just didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And being an only child, she had no, like, there was no
nobody before me, yes,
to like even compare to, or you know, and so I, you know, by the grace of God, I've been able to let go of that anger, and I know, mm-hmm, I needed to for a long time. I just wasn't ready to, because, yeah, I was just upset. I was sad.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen my mom in years.
Wow.
Years. It's been years since 2018. Since 2018.
So she just doesn't come visit, and you didn't have it? Oh.
There's something that she's not
able to.
Yeah. Okay. Some legal.
Oh, wow. Visa.
I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
You probably,
yeah,
know more about that than I do. Yeah. Traveling.
She's not from here. She's not American.
She is.
She, okay, is.
But, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know the legalities of it, but there is, and this is what I'm told. You know, mm-hmm, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the truth is, but
it is sad, yeah, that it, you is, have your daughter, and it's,
yeah. And you know, you just want the world for your kids. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to just be in her life and just never leave her.
Yeah.
But
a lot of people think that I started the podcast because of the cancer, and it's not. It was because of, you know, Sophia and what I went through with her, yeah, and this is Jesus, and my prayer to him was like, I know you're gonna go after your lost sheep, you 100%. Know, and she loves sheep, it's her, yeah, favorite animal. She has sheep all over the, that's, and I'm cool, like, you know, you were God's lost sheep, because, yeah, he had her, and then she went away, and that's Jesus going, you know, yeah, to pursuing her, and that's the reason why, because I feel like people, this is encouraging, this is a ministry to help those that are going through this, you know, difficult times, yeah, to hear people's stories, their, yeah, walks, you know, from all over, different, mm-hmm, walks. Some people were born Christians and went away. Some people never knew God until, yeah, recently, you know? So
yeah,
that's the purpose of this. And I'm just so glad that you're here.
And that's what I've learned too, is like, God will pursue you.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't give up easy.
No.
I mean, looking back, I'm like, gosh, he was literally there. All along. All the time. Yeah. There was never a time where he left me. I pushed him away, mm-hmm, without realizing it, probably because I was naive. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I did like the foxhole prayers, like, God, if you get me out of this. And he did. He got me out of a lot of stuff. He helped me out through a lot of stuff, but I didn't change. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't surrender.
Yes.
He was wanting me to. And I think looking back, I'm like, yep, that was God. It's all God.
Yeah.
It's all God. And, you know, if he didn't pursue me the way he did, I don't know where I'd be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm thankful that he doesn't give up.
Me too. I actually have conversations with Sophia. We talk so much. And usually in the mornings when I'm getting ready, she's getting ready for work too. And she said, Mom, I remember praying to God too. And she said, I didn't want to believe. I knew he was real inside of me, but I, yeah, did not want to say that, because if I said that, I would have to change what I was doing,
yeah,
because what I was doing, I knew it was wrong,
mm-hmm,
you know? And that's, so, yeah, yeah, that's basically, yeah, like, if you say that he's real and you want a relationship, well, you know, the way that you're acting is going to, he's going to change that.
Yeah.
And she just wasn't ready for, yeah, that, which is so interesting. to hear, you know,
that. I think I was the same. I think that, and people telling me that, like, I ran with it.
Yeah.
I could have told those people, no, I really do have a problem, but I think I just ran with it because I wasn't ready to change.
Oh, it's hard.
Very.
Yeah.
Very hard. So I did eventually get out of jail.
So you didn't drink in jail, right?
No.
Because I do hear that sometimes you have.
And it was there.
Crazy. Yeah. That's crazy.
It was there. And it's funny because I didn't like pursue that, but the ladies in jail, they were like, they told me, they said, hey, this is over here. You're not going to do it. We're not going to let you.
Oh.
So it was kind of like their strange way of looking out for me.
Yeah.
Because they were like, we know you have this issue.
Yeah.
And so that's saying, like, not everybody in jail is,
oh no,
you know, like, they have good hearts.
They do.
And I did find that there. I did find people who, you know, I was stripped of everything else. Like, I needed to lean on people, and I did find people there.
Mm-hmm.
And in jail, that the 4 months when I was at the second jail, I did read the entire Bible. I mean, there was not much to do. So yes. I was sitting there cover to cover, read it.
Wow.
And we had this church group that would come in, this little lady. I don't remember her name. It's written in the front of my Bible. But she would just come in and do Bible study with us and just bring, you know, like little Bible study things, little scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this program that you had to sign up for and be accepted for, where you would go out of the cell into another area where you would, like, there's like a video sermon series type of thing. And so I did that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is when I really feel like God got a hold of me,
mm-hmm.
and I surrendered. I truly surrendered at that time. It was in jail, which
wow.
is so wild to think about. I did get out in December of 2019, and I got out not accepting any kind of plea. They had set my court date for March of 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
March of 2020.
Right.
And wow. The lawyer that I actually hired, a girl in jail had told me about this law firm. My stepmom was the one who called. And it was this young lawyer who, you know, she was young, and I was like, I don't know if she's going to, because at this point it's a habitual. My charges were habitual.
What does that mean?
That means that you could go to prison for a long time because I had so many DUIs.
Wow.
So after three, they're like, this is an actual problem.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to tolerate, they are not going to tolerate anymore.
Sure.
Why would they?
Yeah.
Why do they want someone who's continually doing the same thing and not changing?
Who can actually kill people, too.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, why would they want me on the road?
Uh-huh.
Rightly so. And so, you know, there was a lot riding on this. I could either have gotten, like, a year of probation up to 10 years in prison. That's what I was looking at. It was a very broad range. And the lawyer had urged me not to take the plea of, I think they were trying to give me 3 years in prison. I think that's what it was at the time.
Oh my gosh.
She urged me not to take it. And she said, we're going to go with what's called an open plea, which is when the judge hears everything and decides. There's the judge is deciding.
Okay.
So that's when it was like the 6 months probation or year probation up to 10 years.
Okay.
Because habitual charges carry a lot of jail time or a lot
oh
of prison
my gosh.
Time. And so, you know, that's nerve wracking.
Mm-hmm.
But I got released, but I went to a program. It was a year long program. Faith-based, completely faith-based. It's like Bible college, basically, but
wow.
for people who struggle with mental illness or substance use disorders, here in Indy.
But it's for 18 and over.
18 and over, yeah.
That's what I struggle so much to
yeah.
find, you
yeah.
know, things for teens that
yeah.
are faith-based
yeah.
here. We could not find anything. And the church helped us a lot.
They're but few I'm and so, far in between.
Yeah, very few truly. Good ones.
Yes.
She ended up in Utah.
Okay.
But it was her journey too, and it needed to happen because
yeah.
she ended up doing the wilderness program.
Okay.
Are you familiar with
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Crazy. And that really shook her
yeah.
out of her, you know,
and that's what
bones.
We need sometimes.
Yes.
I needed it.
Yes. My sister had an addiction problem too, and I remember her saying, she's too comfortable right now.
Yeah.
Like all of those
yes.
beautiful spa-like
yes.
rehabs. I'm
yeah.
sorry. They're just not doing anything.
What are we
any,
doing here?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
exactly.
Yeah.
Just getting collecting
getting
money
massages.
From the insurance. Yes.
Yeah.
But she had to be sleeping in tents and making her
wow.
tents in like, you know, 20 degree weather. They were
yeah.
in the desert of Utah in the wintertime, sleeping outside in tents, bathing from like boiled water. They had to start their fire.
Yeah.
The staff could not help them.
Yeah.
They would hike I don't know, 11 miles a day with a 50-pound backpack
yeah.
on their backs.
Wow.
And they had their food for the week that they had to ration, like, and then plan to eat a little bit every day.
Wow.
And they would only provide the dinners that they had to cook to from scratch for all of it. So, I mean, I saw her. She had hairs everywhere because they had no access to any, like, they could bathe once a week.
Yeah.
But they did not do any, like, shaving or any, like, you know, like beauty
necessities
things.
Necessities only.
Wow. Soap. No deodorant.
Yeah.
But they were eating so clean, too, that they didn't even smell.
Right.
You know, it's just such a wild... We did, like, a parent overnight, and that was so humbling, too. You sleep in the sleeping bags outside.
Yeah.
And it was so cold that, like, the vapor, like, my breathing formed icicles around the, because all I had out was this.
Oh,
imagine me, Brazilian blood. I'm so thin, but I'm like, oh, what is this?
No. Yeah.
It was rough. But anyway, that really shook her, and it was what she needed to just come back to life. And then there was like so much work after it too, which you know that. It's not like one and done, and then she's
healed.
It's
the after work that's
100%.
Because you can learn all these things, but if you're not willing to put in the work, like, God's going to give you, he's going to provide things for you. He's going to help you. He's going to bless you. But it's our responsibility to utilize what he gives us and propel ourselves forward. We are responsible for our actions and, you know.
And your support system too. I feel like we had to be so extremely, like, life-changing too. We were on our toes, you know, like just watching every move. You have to.
You absolutely have to.
Yes.
I would. Yeah. And my parents were the same way. I remember feeling like I was walking on eggshells all the time, and I'm sure they felt the same.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
100%.
I guarantee you that. So then you got out. Everything is going well at that point.
Yeah, I went to the program for a year, and I ended up having my court date, and my lawyer brought me a Bible, the Joyce Meyer Battlefield of Mind Bible.
Okay.
And she highlighted Isaiah 41:10 in it, which is all about being strong. You know, my hand is upon you.
Okay.
Because we were going into this court date, and it ended up being in person. It was like right before COVID broke out. Like, it was probably like the last one in there.
Yes.
And we went in.
So she's a believer, your lawyer.
She is, yes. You know, she gave my case to this judge, and the defense, they were saying all, you know, everyone's giving their case for me.
Yes.
And the judge was about to read, like, what he wanted to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
She's holding my hand. We're both, like, hands are sweaty.
Oh,
she's holding my hand. She's brand new. Like, this was at the time that she had told me this was her biggest case yet. And I'm like, I don't know if that's supposed to make me feel better. I don't know. Like, she's really good. And she never sugarcoated anything. She was always so honest with me, which was so amazing. She was a literal godsend. Literally, God just gave, like, presented her to us because she was just so good. Held my hand. And then the judge ended up saying that I would have 3 years of what's called front-loaded probation and then serve a year in jail. So it was backwards. So I'd be on probation for 3 years and then go to jail for a year.
Wow.
Which was strange.
Yeah.
But I didn't care. I wasn't going to jail at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, and never did go to jail.
Okay.
And I can get to that part later. But left the court date feeling great. Went back to my program. Completed the program in December of 2020. It looked very different than what, you know, I went in because of COVID.
Sure.
I mean, it was crazy. We were in this building, and the Hope Center, the program is not, it was in the Hope Center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge
building,
So that was good, 'cause we could kind of, like, at least maneuver around there, but we didn't really go anywhere. Our families weren't able to come visit us for a few months because no one knew what was happening.
No, yeah.
So they were just being careful.
Cautious.
So then I graduated, and during that time they had, like, us work at the last portion of our program. So I worked at the boutique that's in the Hope Center.
I remember that. That's when I met you.
Yes,
you were working there. Yes.
Redefined Hope. It's a great, great place. I learned so much there. Great friends were made there. My bosses ended up being two of my really close friends that I, like, still do life with.
Uh-huh.
You know, again, all God's timing.
Yes.
I never would have met them if I didn't go through this. So I was working at the boutique, and then when I graduated my program, I ended up working for the program for a brief few months and then went back to working at the boutique.
Okay.
And then amongst all this time, I re-met I say I re-met my husband because we had known each other for, we had met freshman year of college.
Wow. And at Purdue?
Yeah, Purdue. Wow. Yeah. He was really good friends with one of my sorority sisters.
Okay.
And we met like, hi, I'm Emily. Hi, I'm Alex. Sure. Like, it wasn't like, we didn't exchange phone numbers. We didn't hang out by ourselves.
It wasn't like love at first sight.
No, or nothing like that. Which he would probably say different because he tells me that he had a huge crush on me.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah,
which I'm like, gosh, I really wish that we had like a picture together or something, but we don't. But yeah, so he ended up reaching out to me in December, like right after I had graduated my program. He didn't know anything about my life.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know what I had gone through.
Sure.
He had graduated from Purdue, got married, and had a child. Mm-hmm. This time I was coming up on 2 years. It would be June, would be 2 years of sobriety.
And you did realize at that point that you did have a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And that you never wanted to drink again.
Okay. I think for a while there was still that craving.
Mm-hmm.
But over time when I started like living life and just like actually experiencing joy mm-hmm. outside of partying
mm-hmm.
and meeting these people who had like just screamed Jesus. Yeah. Like they were filled with the Holy Spirit and you knew it as soon as you met them. Like meeting those people and mm-hmm. having them in my life and having them pour into me and not expect anything back from me mm-hmm. was just
a gift.
Yeah, it was a gift. It really was. And I wanted that and I wanted to be that for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really propelled me in my faith journey as well. It was all about the community that I was surrounded with.
That is huge. I tell Sophia too, it's like it was so big for her to go to a school that was small, which she ended up going to school at our church. And it's a small setting, to me, that was, I was adamant that she would not go back to her old, you know, stomping grounds. It's just like, you cannot be back to the same group of friends because you will end up falling for it. And it really did make a huge difference.
Because especially like in that respect, like she's probably changed so much, mm-hmm. but the other people that she was around probably hadn't changed.
Exactly.
You know, and not that they needed to or anything, but
you would have just been back at the same. Been, yeah. And not.
She was in a different. She was different.
Yes.
And she, you know, I always see Sophia and I'm just like,
I know.
Yeah.
I'm so proud.
Me too. Me too.
Thank you. I love that so many of you guys who know her story when we were together to like Michelle, so many people that were so wonderful to like send her little things at rehab to. They were just, I mean, the amount of prayers that she had, child has no idea.
Yes.
And that is really, really, really powerful. Like if you guys are going through something or a loved one, you cannot understand the power of prayer. Just ask for anyone and everyone. I would just be asking for prayers to anyone. Just pray for Sophia, pray for Sophia, pray for Sophia. And it's...
Yes. She's and that's like that's the most powerful because a lot of people say, oh, I could just use some prayers. But it's like, no, I need like,
exactly.
That's the number one thing I need.
Yes.
I don't need anything
first
else.
First and foremost. Yes. So, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. She's just incredible. You should be very proud of her. She's amazing.
Well, I'm proud of you too. I'm just like, I want to give you a hug.
Thank you. Yeah. Like I was saying, I was getting anxiety because I didn't know what dating would look like mm-hmm. sober.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had dated people in recovery and that was always scary because most of the time, not all of the time, most of the time, if one person goes back into their old way, the other person is going to be, it's harder. And I knew that I was more vulnerable because I was still, you know, I was 2 years in, but I would still consider that very new into this recovery and especially in my faith journey.
Yeah.
So dating maybe probably wasn't in my best interest at the time, but I also I didn't think I could date someone not in recovery because there would be alcohol.
Yeah.
How could I ask someone to stop drinking when they don't have a problem?
Sure.
Well, then Alec came along and he never had an issue with drinking. Never has been in trouble. Great kid.
Yeah.
Great, great guy.
Yeah.
And he had reached out in December of 2020, but in October of 2020, when we hadn't talked for, I don't even know, 11 years at that point, we hadn't talked at all. He felt God on Halloween night tell him to stop drinking. And he was like, why would I stop drinking? Like, he didn't have an issue. And he was drinking at the time. Like, it was a Halloween party at his sister's or something. And he was, you know, having something. But it wasn't like, he never got drunk. He never blacked out. Wow. He's been to mission trips to Africa several times. Like, his stepdad's a pastor. Like, he's very much in that world. Like, yeah. He's a very strong Jesus believer. And he just felt like God was like, you need to stop drinking. Didn't tell him why. Just, you need to stop.
So and he was obedient?
Yeah.
Wow. So he stopped.
And I'm like, that's so crazy because he didn't know anything. He didn't know he was going to reach out to me. He didn't know I was struggling at all. Like, yeah. So God eased my anxiety because he's still sober. He doesn't drink at all. He's not had a drink since October of 2020.
How crazy is that?
So that
and that could have, I understand that could have been hard to have someone who's just, even if they're just drinking socially,
right?
It's just like, you don't want to be around it.
I knew I couldn't. I knew, like, my sneakiness.
Yes.
I knew.
Would find an excuse.
Yeah. If it's there, I'm like, no matter how strong, and why would I want to put myself in that position anyway?
Yeah. So then how was it? Like, you guys, so he had a child from a previous marriage.
Yeah. So got married in June of 23. And then shortly after, I got pregnant. I mean, I got pregnant in July.
Wow.
So it was very quick. And I came on staff in October of 23 at our church.
So then you started working in the, or doing the recovery meetings throughout after having the relapse and felt like you needed to be
more
involved.
That's kind of what propelled me to those meetings.
Okay.
I had talked with somebody from church and she was like, well, why don't you come to these meetings? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know they were going
so
on.
Helpful. Yeah.
Yes, and then I met so many people
amazing
that I talk to all the time now. Yeah. Like, they're just, that's
Linda are, was here last,
yeah,
last week.
I saw that. Yeah, yes. I saw that.
She was, and it just brought back a lot of great memories.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what connected me most to the church was through that recovery.
Yeah.
Just meeting all the people and being around people who understand it, who get it.
Yeah. So then you ended up leaving your job at the Hope Center. Because I remember when we met, you were still working there. Probably not super happy because I remember you had some...
Yeah. I just felt like I needed more. Mm-hmm. I felt like I hit my... There was no more growth to be had.
Got it.
So I felt like I just wanted more. I felt like God was calling me to more. I didn't know what that looked like. I felt like it might be on staff at the church.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really know how that worked.
Sure.
You know, I was still new. I'd only been faithfully going to that church for a year. So I don't know. Yeah. I just was like, I don't know what this looks like. But, you know, through people and connecting and all of that, I was asked to come on staff and I took that job in October of 23.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember meeting you. You made such an impression. That's why when I was reading the brief, because I didn't know your story full on, I just was blown away that you went through all of this because you are so not just soft-spoken. I wouldn't say that. It's just more of like well-spoken and your mannerisms and you're so – there's some like calm aura around you. There is. And so I would never picture all of that. You know, that's kind of like a wild lifestyle that
that was a wild aura.
Yes. And I just, it just does not fit you, you know, and that I remember at the time I asked you where you, because I was struggling to find staff here. And I just thought, you know, like Emily would be great to work with, like for real. Yeah. And, you know, I asked you what you did and you said, well, I'm a manager at this store, this and that. And anyway, it passed and time went on. But I really did because you know, sound very, you are a smart person. And that comes through just conversing with you.
Thank you.
It's just like amazing what, you know, the devil was trying to suppress and prevent from coming out.
Yeah.
But you're out and you're
God
free.
Literally just... changed me completely. Like any characteristic that I had before in my addiction, God literally just flipped it.
Wow.
And it's only him. Like I had tried to do it in my own strength for so long through so many different avenues that, you know, I was exhausted trying. My family was exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
I had no friends because they were like...
Exhausted.
They were very exhausted.
Yes.
Yeah. They were like, oh, we're not picking you up again. Like we can't do this. And rightly so. Totally understand it now. At the time, no, I was like, you guys are so mean. Like, why would you leave me? But now I'm like, well, they had their lives to live, you know, and most people after college settle down. They relax. They, you know, they would maybe casually drink, but I was like crazy.
Yeah. College lifestyle. You know, we were talking a little bit off camera, and my oldest is experiencing this in her college, and it's very predominant drinking, partying, and all of that. I think that just maybe a teeny bit less than a big school like yeah. Purdue, but still, they are all out on weekends and this and that. So if you're in school and you see your sorority sister, your fraternity brother, your roommate, your friend
yeah.
spiraling out of control, you see that that's leading to destruction. Mm-hmm. And what would you say? Because, and I'm asking this because your friends chose to kind of pull away because yeah. they didn't know what they to do. Know. Yes. Yeah. And you thought they are just being mean and this and that. What would you, do you have any words of wisdom to help this girls and boys to what, should they say anything yeah. to, what would you do?
I think looking back, I wish somebody would have sat me down and had a real conversation with me and been like, tough love. I mean, tough love goes very far. Mm-hmm. It's what I needed. And it's what a lot of people that I've met have needed that are in recovery. Like the tough love is what kind of helped move us.
Mm-hmm.
But also just coming alongside them because we don't know. Like, I didn't know what I was doing to mm-hmm. myself. I didn't see it from another person's perspective. I was in my head with my emotions, with my insecurities, with my issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have somebody else, and I had close enough friends that I feel like there were several of them that I would have been receptive to.
Mm.
They didn't know. You yeah. know, those conversations are uncomfortable.
Very.
And I don't know that I would have wanted to have those conversations, but having that conversation and then, you know, coming alongside them and going to a meeting with them, going mm-hmm. to church with them, going to a recovery something with them
mm-hmm.
just has that support until they can get that support in that community. Because it's scary to go somewhere where you don't know anyone
yeah.
with an issue that is literally life-threatening.
Yeah.
Just to bring it to these people that, you know, you hear, oh, they know exactly what you're going through. But do they? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know them. Yeah. I know my friends that I'm in college with that I've known for a few years. Like, I know them. So, like, looking back, I wish that somebody would have maybe come alongside mm-hmm. me. But again, we don't know.
Yeah.
It's just
scary. I feel like you would probably, you know, as a stubborn teenager that I feel like we all are when we are in yeah. that age, you will probably push away and push back, but course, the yeah. seed is planted there. Yeah. You know, like, hey, I care enough about you to yeah. tell you that this is a problem.
Yeah.
And whether you want to accept this or not, yeah. I'm here if you need my help,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a lot of people are not going to accept that they have a problem.
No.
But,
and I might have not at the time. Yeah. I probably wouldn't have at the time. But instead of just like kind of withdrawing and not speaking, mm-hmm. I think having the ultimatum, like, hey, I want to be friends with you, but you need to get help mm-hmm. with this issue that you have, or I'm going to be forced to set the boundary of
not hanging out with you anymore.
Yeah, we can't do this.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Perfect. So what does life look like for you right now?
I'm pretty chaotic, but in the best way possible.
With a newborn.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm going to call her a newborn until she's like 3.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, so Elena, my daughter, is going to be 1 on the 23rd of this month.
Wow.
Which is so crazy. It's just a miracle. She's a miracle. Aww. She is like the biggest blessing. And
yeah.
Sorry.
No, I know. That's so beautiful.
Yeah. And for the longest time, I didn't think that was going to be possible it, yes. for me. You know, getting married was one thing, but having a child that I get to raise like that.
Yeah.
It's surreal. But it's just so fun every day. She's really cool. Yeah. Just so fun. And we also just started our foster care journey.
What?
So that was something that Alec had on his heart. He had been exposed to it through church. And, you know, it was something that he felt like he wanted to do. I had never felt like I wanted yeah. to do that. That was never even a thought for me.
That's what marriage is, right? Compromising, right. Lots of it.
But and he told me pretty early on that that's what he, you know, he had felt that calling before.
Uh-huh.
We didn't really do anything with it. With my past, I didn't think that I would even be eligible to foster.
Wow.
But, you know, through talking with people, they're like, no, that's not going to keep you from fostering. Like, that's, you know, mm-hmm. it's something you'll have to talk through and figure out, but it's not something that's going to be a hard no. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a no at all. I wanted to wait, and I was kind of giving excuses like, oh, I want to enjoy Elena longer. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to focus on her. But we were just delaying the inevitable that we were going to do it. So we started doing the fast track licensing last weekend. And we have our first home visit on Monday.
Oh my gosh.
It's quick.
Yeah. It is very quick. It's quick.
Yeah. So we're looking for babies 0 to 1. Okay. We want to keep younger than her, than Elena. But, you know,
we'll That's see. A smart way of doing it.
Yeah. We'll see where God takes us, though. You never know.
Yes.
He could be a 3-year-old in our house by the end of the year. Who knows?
I know. Wow. That's exciting. I wanted to just touch on one thing before we wrap up is the past. You mentioned this with my past. You know, I didn't know I was able to do this. I feel like a lot of us are hung up by our past. We've done things that we're not proud of, and it's really difficult to move on. I remember one of the things with my DUI was having that on my record, which is no longer there, thank God, because it expires after 10 years. But looking for a job and having to actually tell somebody I had a DUI was so shameful. And I just felt like, you know, and I had to be like, I'm not an alcoholic. Happened to have, which I did have a drug, an alcohol problem because I was not a 2-year level, but I look forward to drinking and I would just, you know, so that was very hard on me. Do you have any words of wisdom for people being not just shameful, but just hung up in it, like feeling that that's where, you know, dwelling in their past? How do you get past that?
One of the things that I've done is to not hold on to the label. So you'll never hear me call myself an alcoholic. And I don't call other people that. If they choose that, that's what they're choosing. But I just, you know, I'm somebody who struggled with an alcohol addiction. I don't. That's amazing. Because God wouldn't want me to carry that label.
That's like, that's not he calls you.
No, he has never called me that before. The devil has, but but God hasn't. And so I think that is that's been a huge thing for me, is to step away from, you know, people lie, people cheat, but that doesn't make them liars or cheaters. If you steal something one time, it doesn't make you a thief. Like, to not hold on to those labels, because God is labeling us. God's labeling us his daughters, his sons of, you know, we're his, we're made in his image, and he's none of those things.
No.
So why are we going to hold on to that? I think that's been the biggest thing. And then just being honest with everything. Whenever I've gone in for an interview or something, or, you know, with this foster care journey, I've been very upfront with anybody I talk to. And even with Alec, when we first started dating, I'm like, these are the issues that I've had. You know, here I am.
Yeah.
If you don't want me, that's okay. I understand your reservations, but knowing that I'm not going to take that on. I'm not going to take somebody else's reservations about me on, because I know that I'm free from that. I've been free from this addiction. And it's not coming back. You know, I'm in God's image now.
Yeah.
So,
what a beautiful way of wrapping up. I love this. Thank you so much, Emily, for sharing your story. I'm sure it's going to help so many people. Would you be comfortable closing us in prayer?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's do it.
Lord, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here, Lord. Thank you for the ladies in this room and just your presence, Lord. Thank you for bringing your presence into this room and giving us the words. We just pray over this this meeting, this time of fellowship. We just pray that it reaches those that are seeking, Lord, those that are looking for you, those that may be lost or confused or far from you and just are looking for something to fill that hole in their heart, Lord. We just pray over them. We pray that they come into your arms and they just turn to you and surrender everything to you. Lord, we know that you are just pursuing them, Lord. You're seeking them. You are reaching for them, Lord. And we just know that you are patiently waiting. And we just look forward to what you have in store for us. For anyone listening, Lord, and we just ask that you continue to reveal yourself to us in mighty ways. Pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much for joining us today, friends. I hope you guys are walking away feeling encouraged and maybe even a little lighter. Make sure to subscribe and drop a comment or review so we can keep this faith-filled community growing. Share this episode if it touched you or if you know someone who needs to hear it. Let's spread the love. I'll see you next week on Karina Faith Diaries. And until then, stay strong, stay kind, and keep the faith.